This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Ecologic Radio coming up.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth.
Oh, people, people, don't you love this earth? To share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole.
That you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for we could do. There's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for June 25th, 2021.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Sally will be back next week. Today, Ecologic Collective member Tim Keating brings you experts in green roofs. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Donna. Hi, Ken. It's great to be on the air with you guys again. So first off, let's have our guests introduce themselves so our listeners have a voice to go with the name. I don't know if you guys had chosen an order to do that, but Paul, perhaps?
Hello. Hello. I'm on the phone, but I'm, the phone is not connected to the computer.
You're on the air.
Okay.
That was Paul Mankiewicz. And we also have...
Josh, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Josh Harrison, and I'm very happy to be connected here for this show. I am one of the co-founders with Paul, Igor, Michael, and Phoebe of Leaf Island. And I also co-direct something called the Center for the Study of the Force Majeure, which is an art, science, climate group based at UC Santa Cruz. And I'm very happy to be here today.
Phoebe, that's you.
Next. Who else is on the phone? Is Michael Fishman on the phone?
My name is Michael Fishman. I'm calling in from New York City, where I've been an urban planner for 25 years teaching resilient infrastructure for geographies prone to crisis. I currently work as a city planner with Mont McDonald, and I'm very proud to be part of this.
All right. Well, thanks for that. It's obvious we have some real veterans of the environmental movement here today. So, Paul, the other day you started to talk about how you got into Green Roots, which I know is quite some time ago. Maybe you could give us a bit of that background for folks listening.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Paul Mankiewicz, I'm a biologist. I literally did experiments in test tubes 1,000 years ago in graduate school. And then people asked me at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in the early 80s, 81, if it would be possible to grow plants on rooftops. And I said it would, except soil is far too heavy at 120 pounds a cubic foot. So I, knowing what plants needed, devised an ultra-lightweight soil from the waste stream, waste urethane and styrofoam, the same thing they use in hydroponics. And we started literally the urban rooftop greenhouse project at the cathedral, and I have since built maybe the first 30 street-side stormwater. Maybe the first 30 stormwater capture systems. And I
Paul's been a leader in this field in New York City ever since I graduated. And I think that his Gaia Soil has educated me, at least, to understand that we can build green roofs without causing a ruckus and a fuss, not even needing to ask for permissions when things are actually lighter than furniture would otherwise be.
Wow. And this is Josh. I'd also like to add that a green roof is a complex living piece of a building structure. And as Paul has shown, and scientifically, the way and what you grow on that roof makes a huge difference to the impact that roof has on the local environment. And maybe Paul can go a little bit deeper into that as well.
In a beautiful day like today, a black roof will be 130 to 160 degrees. But the meadow or forest in Central Park, while the top leaves will be over 90, the lower leaves in the soils will be in the 80s. Urban heat island is gone because plants do us a favor of reversing urban heat island by capturing carbon. And that's the trick that runs the biosphere.
Wow. So what we've calculated, for example, is that if we were to take 25% of the city's walls and roof spaces, we could literally bring the temperature of this city to be exactly the same as it is in Central Park. And that's a big deal for us. To think that all it would take is covering some of the ugliest walls and providing some of the most wonderful roof spaces on Earth to also fix our urban heat island problems.
So what's keeping that from happening?
I think it's a matter of scale, and that's why this group has actually come together, is that people really want to do the right thing, and one at a time, they are doing the best that they can. But until we find a series of products, you know, not unlike the Belgian block, right? Like, just as simple as that. New York City streets are known for the Belgian blocks that were the ballast of the ships. If we could find something that common that could just literally find its way to the roofs and walls of our city, the streets and the coastlines, our city could actually be more ecologically productive than it was when it was in its natural state.
Actually, but let me contribute this one piece, Tim. You pay in New York $6.30 for every 100 cubic feet of water that you use. That's what you use as a sewer bus. That same amount of water fed to a rooftop is worth about $350 worth of cooling capacity as well as carbon capture. So what do we need to change it? We just need a rule that says if you're a landlord and you feed that water in your washing machines or your gray water to your roof, you will get $6.20 back, $3, something like this. That would be a start. Mm-hmm. And then there's already an incentive to build a green roof. But you would be, it's a kind of thing hedge funds like. You're paid back in perpetuity as long as plants capture carbon and cool the city.
You know, one of the things we like, one of the things we like to say is that point out is that green technology is billions of years old, and it's been proven all over the world in all kinds of temperatures and all kinds of climates under all kinds of weather, and the mechanical technologies that we use end up needing to be repaired and fixed and maintained over time and have useful lifespans that varies widely, whereas ecologically motivated infrastructure, in fact, accretes in value over time, becomes better over time with maintenance, and continues to add value in perpetuity as long as you take care of it. The other thing that we're talking about, Paul is talking about one economic benefit, but let's not forget ecological processes are complex and interrelated, and you actually get multiple benefits from working. You not only do you address the heat island effect, you address local particulate matter, you also address local climate issues, and by retaining water, you also have a major impact, as Paul mentioned, on one of the great urban crises of New York is what to do with our combined sewer overflow. And that's also a national and international problem. So the green, we call ourselves Leaf Island for a reason. We're looking at leaves, and they're not just on roofs, on the sidewalls. New York City has way more, because it's a vertical city, it has way more wall space than we know what to do with. So that's the kind of, that's another place in the streets and the harbors as well. So that's where we're looking at covering, when we talk about covering New York to the same level it had when Manhattan was Manhattan.
And since that was brought up, let me give you one unbelievable, you don't have to believe this, except I could prove it. The peak load in New York City is 11.6 megawatt, whatever it is. That's what gives Con Ed nightmares, because potential for blackout and brownout is on us every time it gets to those super hot days. When Manhattan was Manhattan, when Henry Hudson sailed up past these 300 square miles of the city, that ecosystem, because of its thermal partitioning, its daily energy production in terms of carbon capture, it was 130,000 megawatts, 12-fold higher, basically dropping the body temperature of the city, capturing carbon, and running the whole biosphere at the same time. So that literally is the opportunity. We could change the climate of the city literally by making it more ecologically productive, more biologically diverse, and cleaning the air in the process and the water.
And since Paul went to the energy sector, I do know that there is a topic about solar versus green roofs, and we want to dismiss any potential, you know, conflicts there. There is no conflict between solar and green roofs. In fact, the more independent off-grid we can get as far as energy production, those places that are most at risk, for example, in New York, like Red Hook, you know, was without power, I guess, longest as far as any community after Sandy. You know, the thought that the green roof that you built, Paul, in Red Hook on the Linda Tool factory also incorporates solar means that factory at least had a way of generating its own energy in spite of Con Edison's failure. And it's not Con Edison, of course, it's failing. It's a whole host of things. Thank God for Con Edison. I hope that's helpful.
Right. Yeah, that's great. There's so many issues around buildings and construction. You know, I do a lot of work on consulting on sustainable wood. I've gotten very involved in embodied carbon as an issue for architects. In many ways, it's laughable how, you know, folks think they're looking at the right materials and whatnot, yet extraction, the actual damage that's done to extract the materials is always ignored in the production of the LCA, the life cycle analyses. But it's often occurred to me, and I remember going to a public meeting in Jersey City a couple of years ago where they were putting up a big huge tower, and they didn't even bother to think about addressing the runoff from the building. Even though Jersey City is literally under decree order with the EPA to address, mitigate runoff, because they're also a CSO city that is combined sewer overflow. So this is a huge issue, and it just occurs to me, like, there are all these ways that we have to make our buildings net zero. We have to make them net zero in terms of their operational energy. We have to make them net zero in terms of runoff. We have to, but also, you know,
what does net zero
net
mean?
Zero, net zero, basically it means two things to different people. One is net zero carbon emissions, and the other is net zero energy. So, you know, net zero energy is just purely the amount, the throughput of consumption of energy in the building. So therefore, the building is generating as much energy as it is consuming during its operation. Net zero carbon starts to include this idea of embodied carbon, that is, all of the materials that went into the building, what was the cost of the carbon loss to produce those materials? So this starts to become something that's really, really difficult. But, you know, there are all these other ways. And I just saw something with a building, and they were talking about the footprint of the building. They were going to produce 1.5 times green spaces, public green spaces within the building, to as to the ratio of the footprint of the building. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, that doesn't consider so many things going into the building. And, you know, but we do have to move in that direction, and green loops obviously are one of the ways to do that. Every building really should have them.
Right. Yeah. Tim, you raise a really important point about embedded energy and embedded carbon. And I think one of the things that we've focused on is adaptive reuse of the urban waste stream, of the vast amount of styrofoam concrete and glass aggregate that New York City and every city produces. And by using those as our primary materials, we actually are very much addressing the carbon issues globally. And again, all of these things are systemic. One of the most critical pieces that we try to look at is, and you hear it in everything Paul is saying, this is a living system. We have to treat the city as a living system. We can't disaggregate the pieces and just say we're going to just look at the roof. Then you get into the situation of the building you described, where they may be LEED certified, but they did nothing about runoff and they did nothing about embedded carbon. So exactly. Both of those are big problems. So anyway, I think that's a really important point.
And I'm sure your audience is looking to hear about exactly how quantitative we can be. So let me put it this way. They may not be looking for that, but the other part is, were we to have a 10,000 square foot green roof, that would capture something like a ton of carbon a year. Okay, now, but who cares about carbon? It would be something like 1/100 or 1/1000th of a ton if you planted it with milkweeds of monarch butterflies. And how much more, what could be more valuable than pounds of monarch butterflies? The value added is enormous.
Right.
Just the caterpillars are beautiful to watch. The biodiversity of this city, of the Southern Appalachian province, is the highest temperate biodiversity on planet Earth. So the rooftops could easily sustain 500 or 1,000 native plants and some multiple of that of insects. Mm. And the 200 passerine birds that fly from the south to the north need a place to feed. Were we to put something like viburnum or bayberry or any other plants, when they come through in the spring when there's no insects out, they love those high lipid seeds, and it would be a magnificent stopover for these millions of birds that literally have to stop here to make it south to north.
Great.
And it's not fair. I'm sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say we're starting to already bump up on time, but I know that Ken had wanted to explore this idea that somehow we can't have solar and green roofs at the same time, and I know our talk the other day.
I've seen them in the same bars.
Basically,
I just want
proved
to tell
that
you
wrong.
I've seen green roofs and solar panels in the same drinking establishments. They go together well. They go together well indeed.
I think we're talking about different things
arm
here.
Arm.
because leaves are solar panels, and they have a thermal optima about 80, 90 degrees. The same thing for the photovoltaics. The same. You have photovoltaics over plants. and the temperature of both the leaves and the photovoltaics is better. As I said, the same bar. They drink together. They're happy.
What I like about laughing about the social aspect of this is that sometimes it is way too technical. The fact is that, you know, we should not be shy to say that it's a wonderful place to hang out. It's just an amazing thing to be next to a green wall or on a green roof.
Yeah.
It's an incredible experience.
Right.
And it brings people together. It allows people to stay with one another longer, and it attracts other species to do the same. So, you know, it's not just a matter of all responsibility and technicality and, you know, can we this or can we that? It's like, how can you not? How can you not? I mean, all of the people who are walking their children like dogs in Manhattan build a green roof.
And I especially like it because it mitigates the garbage coming off the dirty water coming off and into the harbor. And as a kayaker, everybody knows I'm a kayaker, I want the waters to be as clean as possible. And why not have green roofs use that water?
Can you do a green roof on a private house that has a slanted roof?
No, they have been done. Kelly Luckert, my friend out in Missouri, does that. But you can. It's just it's a little more technology involved. Easier when they're flattish. But they haven't built. The Germans have done a lot with that as well.
Of course they have.
Yes.
So,
and Ken, I brought up the monarchs for you, Ken, because people can't see it, but on his Zoom screen, he's got a monarch behind him. So I wanted to produce a few pounds of extra pounds of monarch to go with that.
And you can also grow food on a green roof too, for yourself.
Yeah,
for yourself.
Well,
and,
listen,
well, not only that,
guys.
Once again,
the time has just flown by. I'm so sorry, but thank you, Tim, for bringing these fascinating guests to you. Josh, please tell people how to contact you.
All right. The easiest way to contact us is via our website, which is leafisland.org. Just the words leafisland.org. Or you can reach me at josh@leafisland.org. That's josh@leafisland.org.
Tune in next Friday to WBAI July 2nd, 2:30 p.m., when we discuss the Antarctic ice melting into the Southern Ocean. And you can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming events and people making a difference, like the people you've just been hearing. This is a most important role for Ecologic and WBAI-FM.
WBAI members should have received a ballot in your email box June 7th. You'll have until July 7th to respond to that ballot. The same people who kicked in the doors of WBAI in October 2019 are at it again and want to change the bylaws to gain control. This time, they are better funded and organized. You can find more info on www.wbaifightback.org or 917-781-0366. The information line again is 917-781-0366.
We love your support. And this past Saturday, Ecologic did a special on Juneteenth, and Environment TV has made a TV show about it. It will air this Sunday on MNN. It's Channel 34 for half of Manhattan. I don't know what it is the other. Eventually, it'll also be on YouTube. A wonderful, wonderful special on environmental justice. And you can listen to this show again and any of our past shows and get environmental news on a variety of topics, such as a new species of microbe that can actually help the environment, at www.ecoradio.org.
And, of course, we would love you to become a member in the name of your favorite radio program, Ecologic. It's a win-win.
There are many video and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to WBAI. Go to givetowbai.org and choose Ecologic on the drop-down menu. And much appreciation to our engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you Friday, July 2nd at 2:30 p.m., where we discuss Antarctic ice.
Here comes the sun.
Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. Statues of George Floyd in Brooklyn, New York, and Newark, New Jersey, were both defaced the day before the sentencing of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, who was found guilty of murdering Floyd. According to a local report, the Brooklyn statue of Floyd's face and its pedestal were both spray-painted black, and the words PatriotFront.us were stenciled on it in white. Former Minneapolis policeman Chauvin will be sentenced this afternoon for murdering George Floyd in May 2020. Prosecutors are asking that Chauvin face 30 years in prison, while his defense team has requested probation. The maximum sentence allowed by law is 40 years. His sentencing today is a rare event. In the past 16 years, just 9 law enforcement officers have been sentenced to prison terms after being convicted of murdering people on the job, according to data from the Police Integrity Research Group at Bowling Green State University. The Department of Justice is suing the state of Georgia over its controversial law imposing a number of new restrictions on voting. The so-called Election Integrity Act limits access to ballots in heavily Democratic areas, criminalizes giving water to voters waiting in line at polling places, and reassigns electoral oversight power to the state's conservative legislature. The suit will be spearheaded by the DOJ Civil Rights Division Chief Kristen Clark and Austin and Associate Attorney General Vanita Gupta. More than 75 search and rescue teams are looking for survivors in the rubble of a partially collapsed condo building in Surfside, Florida. At least 4 people are now reported to have died in the disaster, and 159 remain missing. Earlier today, President Biden approved an emergency declaration and ordered the FEMA to assist search and rescue efforts. Meanwhile, what is believed to be the first lawsuit brought against the Champlain Towers South Condominium Association was filed late last night. The court filing alleges the condominium did not provide adequate protection for residents and visitors to the building and did not repair structural issues and failed to prevent the catastrophic collapse of the building. 4 people are known to have been killed and 11 injuries were reported following the collapse of much of the building in the Surfside area of Miami. Several people have been pulled from the rubble, and there have been reports of noises. The local authorities have said they expect the death toll to increase as the rescue workers continue their searches. The New Jersey State Senate passed a bill that bars state agencies and private jails from starting or renewing contracts with ICE to detain immigrants. It's now up to Governor Phil Murphy to sign the bill. And if he does, New Jersey will be the 2nd state, after California, to block the opening of new ICE detention centers.